My name is DeAndre, and I'm an alcoholic. And good to be sober, good to be free. Welcome to the new people. My sobriety birthday is May the 29th, 1991. My home group is a no-nonsense group in Redondo Beach, and my sponsor is Jimmy Moss. And it's an honor and a privilege to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially to show up sober. And I want to thank Boyce and the rest of you guys and gals for having me here. It's hot, and this is Lancaster. And this is my home group for 12 years, and I love this place. And I haven't been here in several months. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. Your Alcathon, our Alcathon, is looking pretty festive. I told Shalaby you guys have enough decorations up to last for the whole year until you bring them down. And it's tradition here. In fact, I see some shit from, you know, your last Alcathon up behind me. Just really grateful to be a part of the permanent motif of Alcoholics Anonymous here at the Open Door. And I want to thank my friends for coming with me. Several of my members of my sponsee family and home group rode up with. And we also have a time slot here tomorrow, so if this pitch doesn't go off too well, my friends will be here to clean up for me tomorrow afternoon around 2 o'clock. Oh, God, whoo! Let me tell you, it's been a long haul. I'll start out by saying that I'm a real alcoholic. By way of physical allergy, a spiritual malady, and the mental obsession when it's triggered, I'm off and running. And before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. I was pretty much a dead man talking. And I've done quite a bit of that to myself. You know, 95% of my dilemma is that I'm selfish and self-centered. And the other 5% is that I am an alcoholic. And I'm 100% insane without this program. And through God's sponsorship and the staffs, I've been able to feel some fear and do it anyway and walk through those things. And I learned that originally from my original sponsor, Dennis Lee. He's the first man that approached me after treatment and took me through all 12 steps of the program. And what happened was I grew up in Watts. I'm from the Jordan Downs Housing Project. Watts is not very close to this community at all. It's far away. And I love the projects. I remember when my mother used to have these parties, and she had 6 kids. So we had a party for each month of the year in the front part of the year. And then for the rest of the 6 months, she would just make shit up, like Flag Day, have a Flag Day party, or, you know, just all kind of stuff. And they would play spades, which is a card game, and bidwiz, and all this stuff. And me and my sister would clean up after the party. And we'd be cleaning up those drinks that those normies and hard drinkers would leave behind. And I just fell in love with that. That was just like the way to go. You know, anybody gonna help clean up? Yeah, me. Back off, you know. And I love cleaning up after my mother's parties. And my mother made alcohol look very fun. You know, and what happened for me is I wound up getting loaded one time with my brother and my cousin when I was around 15, 14 years old. And from then on, you know, I told myself that I'm never not going to not do this, period. And I proceeded to drink and get loaded and party, you know, all the way out of dropping out of high school, you know, because something about alcohol, what it does for me, it doesn't do to the normal or average drinker. When I take a drink, the drink takes me, and I'm out of control, you know. So I wind up getting ran out of that community, and I wound up getting chased into that rehab And up there, they had these people coming up on these, they called them panels. And they were coming up on these panels, and they all looked like they were high to me. They looked like they had been smoking some weed or something. And these men and women would come up, and they would talk about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and what it had done to them and why they weren't drunk anymore. And it was interesting. It was so interesting that half my stay there, I sat in the front of the meeting hall. You know, because when I first got there, I liked sitting in the back. Because when you sit in the back, you can kind of half-ass dodge facts. And I had to sit in the front to really get more acquainted with what these people were saying, you know. And it seemed like to me, like if you're going to drive all the way to hell to Warm Springs, which is like on this road to Jericho, you may have found something interesting, particularly on like Friday and Saturday nights. You know, these people were driving all the way up that hill. And I just remember meeting a guy up there during the week named Al Russell, and he used to come to our noon meeting on the hill. And he too used to sound like these panel people. It was almost like they were related, you know. And he was sharing about his life and some of the struggles that he was having. But, you know, he would always share about what he did with this program in order to not be loaded no more. And all those things became interesting to me, so interesting that I started sponsoring people before I even took the steps. And I was going over work with some of the new people at Warm Springs in the dining hall with a working knowledge of absolutely nothing. And I may have killed a few of them, but I survived that experience sober. And, you know, I got out of there. I met a guy named Kenny Washington who was a counselor there, and he backdoored me into one of his sober living homes, and I moved over here around the corner from this place to H12, you know, which is a sober living home at the time. And and I came here on to the noon meeting. I got out in the morning, and I came here to the noon meeting because my friend Bob Aswell had already been out, and he told me, you need to go to the open door. And it wasn't in this room. We were two doors over. And he said, you need to meet this guy named Dennis. I already have you set up with him. And I thought to myself, we'll see. My friend here knows the status, you know, because I was the ex-AA steering committee chairman at Warm Springs. So I needed somebody that was really going to, you know, be able to work with me. Since I had memorized the book and hadn't taken any of the steps. And he introduced me to this man, and that day at the noon meeting, I was sharing about how I was miserable. I was going to get ready to take my year cake. It was coming up, and I didn't know what to do. And I shared with the group that I had already taken the first three steps because I filled out those packets at Warm Springs, my step packets. And I shared, and he made me laugh during the noon meeting. He made a comment about the floors and how dirty they were. And he suggested that the people who were feeling like shit help clean this shit up, was what he said. And I stayed after the meeting, and he talked to me. And he asked me, did I have a sponsor? And I told him no. And he said, well, I'll help you. And I thought about it, and it's like, well, I don't know if I really need help, but I know I need a sponsor because I know that's politically correct to have. I can already see that that's a pretty popular thing to do around here. And so I talked to him about those step packets, you know, and he listened to me very carefully right outside the door. And then he interrupted me because I had gone on for about 5 or 10 minutes. He finally interrupted me and said, it sounds like you know a lot about those first three steps. He says, it sounds like you need to get started on your inventory. But first, I want to let you know what I know about those first three steps. You know, and that kind of threw me for a loop because I didn't know what he knew about those first three steps. And right then and right there, Dennis Lee gave me a writing assignment. He told me what to do, he told me where to go, and he told me where I should be. And I know that that is not the reality of a lot of people's sobriety. And that's why they called me down to share mine with you from this podium. It's my turn. And that's what took place. And he started reading that big book with me. He wasn't uncomfortable with me reading the book alone because he said I was too smart for my own good. And I don't know about you if you've ever been cornered by a racist, but this is what I felt, because as a black, intelligent person who has gone through 11 months of rehabilitation, you know, the last thing I need is some big old white man from Florida telling me what the hell to do. But I listened anyway, you know. And he talked about what happened to him. And he told me how he got sober. And then he used that big book and our time together to show me how he was staying sober. You know, and he used to suggest that I come to a meeting once a week here at the Open Door, even though I was making all my meetings at the Open Door. One meeting in particular that he wanted me at was that 10:30 fear meeting on Tuesday nights. And I hated that meeting. Could not stand the fear meeting. And the only reason why, now that I'm looking back at my life and like what was going on with me, the only reason why I really, 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 really despised that meeting is because I knew no matter what was going on in his life, you know, if he was not out of town, you know, he was at that meeting for years. And he was very busy, both monkey business and all kind of other stuff. But when it came to the 10:30 fear meeting, if Dennis Lee was not here, we knew why. You know, he was always at that meeting. And he'd read that format, you know. You're supposed to give everybody a chance to read in the meetings. But Dennis was responsible for reading that, you know, in that meeting. And I just remember sitting around listening to him. One night during the day he had surgery on his eyes. He had to get these moles removed off his eyes. And I thought to myself, finally, you know, a break from this fucker, you know. Didn't work, you know. She dropped him off. He showed up after eye surgery to the fear meeting. And it's just like, me and my other friend, it's like, how did he get here? You know, we didn't know that Elko dropped him off, but it was just like he was just somebody that was more concerned about God's sponsorship in the steps than his own well-being on a lot of days. I mean, he was just sold on the ideas that are contained in this great society and in that book. And I just remember him walking me through a particular amends. I had to go make an amends in downtown Los Angeles. And that was the time that a gal named Marie was the real popular newcomer. Marie was around. And everybody loved Marie, and everybody went to court with Marie. And, you know, all the guys wanted to have sex with Marie. And Marie just sort of floated above my fucking ego in 10 minutes, you know, when she showed up here. And I had come around the time where I needed to make this amends, because I had three traffic warrants down in Los Angeles. And I told him, I finally told him about them. It took me a couple of months. And I just thought to myself, I may not be as popular as Marie, but a lot of people know me, you know, now, you know. And so when I go make this amends, everybody's going to come with me. We're all going to hold hands, like in the movie Toy Story. You know, we all going to hold hands and go down to the courthouse. And Dennis told me, here's the $14 that you need for the Greyhound, and you need to go on down there. No support. No support, you know. And I just thought to myself, here's another sign of racism right here. Everybody run around following this little white girl and they want to all sleep with her and stuff. But the, you know, the crazy black guy needs real backup and nobody's there for me. I did not tell him that at all. I just got on the Greyhound bus that morning and went on down there. And I went to the courthouse. We had just done my third step. And he rushed me through all these other things. He didn't take a whole lot of time in between the third step and the ninth, because he knew my stomach was really, really weird and I would just flip out and lie and bullshit. And he really wanted to tackle the things that were really tackling me. Like I needed surgery when I got here and I was lying about that. You know, and I dealt with that really quick with him. And I went down to that courthouse, man, and I was scared, and I said the third step prayer. I was waiting on the judge to call me up, and he called me up, and I had my completion letter for Warm Springs, and he stamped all the little ticket papers and said, "You're done." And I almost fainted. I got real lightheaded because I had built up this fear that my sponsor needed to walk me through, see? And he knew I needed courage and the truth to do it, just like the book says. You know, but I didn't have the kind of faith at first that I thought I should have had, you know. So he showed me blind faith by telling me to take my ass on down there. And that guy, when he said, "You're done," I went all the way. I don't know if you've ever been to the courthouse downtown, but a lot of this stuff takes place upstairs. So I rode the elevator all the way down, and I thought to myself, they didn't give me any papers or anything. I got to go back up there. And I went back up to the courtroom, and the bailiff said, "You're done." You know, but I'm so used to not being done with my bullshit. I'm so used to this long country music trail of crap that goes along with who I'm supposed to be. I didn't know how to be free. You know, and I rode the bus back, and I was telling all my friends that I had the best sponsor in the world, you know. But before I went, before I went down there, I didn't like him. And when I came back, he was awesome. You know, aren't people awesome when you realize they're helping you? Don't they suck when you don't realize that at all? You may be a candidate of alcoholism. And so anyway, I went through that. And then finally, you know, there came a time in my sobriety where I went, you guys call it crazy, and I went alky crazy, and I was at the speaker meeting one night, because Dennis had told me that when you get 5 years sober, that your head's going to come out of your ass. He promised me that. And one time, I had 5 years sober, and I went and heard the speaker, I think it's down in Silver Lake, at the AT Center. And I heard that man saying that, you know, he had 5 years sober and his head was out of his ass and he was free. And so I went and told Dennis, and it dawned on me, oh, I got 5 years and my head's coming out of my ass now. And Dennis just simply replied, "Yeah, your head is coming out of your ass, but your mouth is hanging out." And I got resentful when he told me. And I thought it was embarrassing and rude for him to talk to me like that. So off I went to find another sponsor. And I found this guy down at the rafters, you know, and he was a really nice guy. And he told me the most profound thing I had ever heard. He told me that I needed to continue to work and go talk to Dennis, you know, and that's what I did. You know, and then I moved away too. You know, I got out of here. And I've had some people like Steve and the other Steve that went out, you know, they helped me, you know, deal with the step work and stuff. You know, and to kind of turn the corner on Dennis for me, it was like after I got older in sobriety, I started realizing how much of a commitment that he had with this program and guys and gals like me, you know, in spite of his flaws, you know. And the fear that I experience is the fear of being sober and not behaving as a drunken fool. You know, that is the ultimate fear of this alcoholic when I'm all done balking. You know, and I had an original sponsor that knew that that's what was really going on with me, and he was able to help me through the work and get this relationship with this higher power that gets and keeps me sober. And left to my own devices, I'm really, really a very a fearful, thirsty, insane man. You know, and I'm looking at some of the faces here right now at this meeting, and some of the people that aren't really here, but I see their plaques and stuff. And the history that I have with Alcoholics Anonymous starts from this place. You know, and being so grateful. Because my sponsor was really not the kind of guy that was sort of a, you know, perfect individual. The one thing that I love about Dennis, particularly in regards to the meeting, I mean, there's a difference between a groom and a meeting, right? And not only was he able to come and visit certain meetings, but he was an effective part of this group. And there was a certain amount of respect that he had for it, particularly while the meetings were going on. It was almost like he knew when to crosstalk. Or it seemed as though he knew when to talk shit about me while I was sharing. And everybody would laugh at the right time and everything. But there was still a certain amount of respect that he had for the function of the meeting and how the group needed to survive. And he was very clear on that. And the only way that I know that now is by looking back at some of the things he did, and it wasn't always connected to what I wanted him to say. And I remember when Brenda called me and told me that Dennis had finally passed away, because we had been down here a couple of weeks before that, me and my friends. And even before that, me and a couple of my sponsees went and saw him in the hospital. And it just looked like, in spite of what he was dealing with, you know, he always knew that he was in AA. I never really seen him waver from that, in spite of all the shit he caused for himself on certain days and whatnot. You know, he never really wavered from the fact that he was a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I pray to God that he passed that legacy on to me. You know, I don't ever want to get too many years where I forget about the days I was in when I got here. And coming back here is a clear indication of the fact that I'm just an alcoholic. I don't know if you've ever been back to your classroom when you've gotten older, but a lot of times when you go back to your kindergarten class or your fifth grade class, it just seems like all the furniture has gotten smaller, and it's because you've grown, so your size has changed, not these objects. And what I'm sharing right now is not everything is the same size here. I haven't grown beyond the respect that I need for the open door. You know, I don't have it so good that the open door is so fucked up that I can just openly disrespect it, because I've moved beyond what the open door means for people. You know, I don't have that kind of sobriety today. When my mind starts churning those kinds of thoughts, I'm in danger. And so are you. See? Because I'm connected to you. And when I'm disrespectfully running around here, not respecting the thing that's the core of what I need to be about, the main taproot of my sobriety is my absolute powerlessness over alcohol. And without being connected to a group, honestly and respectfully, I'm just an irate fool that nobody wants you to work for. Page 52, those bedevilments, they become a part of my reality. He taught me that if I can come to a place like this and truly try to respect what's really going on, then when my supervisor on that job tells me to do something, I'll shut the hell up and do it. And he taught me how to transcend these behaviors and these ideas into regular everyday life without my AA humility badge on. And I had a certain amount of anonymity about being in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm just really tripping off that, and I've been telling the story lately when I went and applied for that job over there at that retail store. And he took me over there, and he loaned me in his green tie to get the job. And I went in that place, man, and those people hired me right on the spot. And I came out of there with a big old huge shitty grin on my face. And for one little half a second, it looked like he was kind of smiling a little bit. And then when I got in that car, he told me, give me my goddamn title. Because he knew who he was dealing with, regardless of who those people in that building thought they were dealing with. And that's why I love my sponsor. You know, and I can only do that with time sober. I can't do that with problems of abundance that I don't want to solve. I don't see the love of my sponsor when I'm dealing with that. You know, but on the other side of getting through this fear, then all of a sudden I see what I'm supposed to be doing around here. You know, and I don't have to be perfect, and I don't have to be the one that everybody likes, and I don't have to have all the money. You know, I just need to be the guy that's willing to set aside my self-determined objectives in order to have some sort of real connection to the group. There's meetings all over the place, you know. And something about the group, you know, the group I'm involved in right now, you know, we're coming up on an anniversary. We'll have 2 years as a group. And it's not really a big group, you know. And some of my friends, if Shalaby's been down there, Janie, and so have you, Boyce, and, you know, even Steve has traveled outside of the comfort zone and gone down. And what I want to share with you is we also visit a group called Pacoima. And they have customs, and the open door has customs, and each group is autonomous. Each group has their own character. The character of the open door is that we care if you want to stay sober. You know, and we'll let you raise hell in here too. I mean, if you really want to stay sober. Because when I came here, they were throwing chairs. Joni would be in here acting a fool. And the only reason why we would sort of kind of put the cradle around the baby, so to speak, is because we really believed she wanted to stay sober. In other words, we didn't believe that she just wanted to have a place to hang out and do whatever the hell she wanted to do whenever she wanted to do it. We believed as a group that she wanted to stay sober. So I'm here to share this afternoon that if you mean business, so does the open door at its core. But if you don't mean business, then these people can see monkey business a mile away. And they may just stop you in your tracks in order to preserve the sanctity of the group. Because no one individual is more important than the group. You know, and I'm not saying this from some Martin Luther King Jr. Book. You know, this is from AA literature and our experiences as a society. You know, the group is more important than the individual. I was reading a service manual the other day, and I was quoting some of that stuff with some of my friends, and it's astounding to see that the co-founders had this great human experience based on the fact that one day they could die. So they had to get some stuff organized. As pious as they were, it came to them, oh my God, we might die. We got to do something besides try to do everything. Sure, boys can relate to that. And in order to include everybody, we needed the traditions. And when Bill first wrote the traditions, other groups that he would try to go speak at would say, hey, Bill, you know, we know that these tradition thingamabobs are important to you, but we want to hear your drunkala. You know, and Bill was sort of treated like crap for a little minute. in regards to the traditions, you know. Most alcoholics, you know, when instincts have gone astray, they balk at investigation, you know. And don't nobody really want to be looking at these traditions in regards to the fact that I want you to prioritize me. You know, what about me? What about my fear? What about my distractive ass behavior? And the truth of the matter is, you know what? There's room for everybody. But this isn't a hostage situation. And he taught me that there is a rescue operation going on here, however. And we're not going to let you new people screw it up. We're not going to let the dry drunks come in and screw up our groups. And I'm experiencing that in my home group, and I'm experiencing that in my sobriety. See, I was really wet and soaking wet when it comes to reading the book with my sponsees and going through the steps. I'm really good at that. But when I'm a dry drunk in regards to the traditions and the 12 concepts of service, those are instincts gone astray. I'm chaotic. Who cares about what's going on? I'm here now. You know, and that kind of drunken behavior at the group level is really not healthy. And I just wanted to put that out there. That when I'm in fear of the traditions, I need to really do maintenance on my spiritual condition. See? And I love the fact that AA rotates its leadership so everybody can get their turn in the arena. You know, it's not just some sort of a thing we do through nepotism or something. Everybody can be the whatever. You know, everybody has an opportunity to learn about this stuff that keeps us from falling apart. And when I'm dry and I'm not willing to put my hand in and to be a part of that, you know, I become a necessary nuisance that the group still knows how to get around. It's beautiful. Alcoholics Anonymous is amazing. You know, because to be honest with you, when I'm involved in the steps and my sponsor and God, and Dennis Lee used to say, when my head and my ass is in the same spot, you can't screw with me. You know, and if push comes to shove, my God will push me toward the love that I need. You know, and so what I had to do is I had to really get involved even more and not just sit around and complain about the open door. Or try to figure out some kind of a mock presentation of how I'm really doing what needs to be done, and they're all screwed up over there. Because I remember the day when this building was flooded, right? And we couldn't have no meetings in here. And I remember a couple of those groups that we were talking crap about letting us have meetings in their hall. Because that flood affected AA as a whole as far as all the people in this area that needed a meeting. See? And love should go beyond my self-determined objectives on who I think I'm supposed to be around here. I don't know if it feels like I'm lecturing. But I have a hard time with this icy heart really taking a look at my part. I need sponsorship. I need a group that can see right, you know, I told Dennis Lee used to say he had a sponsor that could read two sentences into his bullshit. And that's what I need. You know, and I still have that today. And that all started from me accepting the way that he worked with me here. I miss my original sponsor. I miss calling him and having him shoot jokes on me. You know, and tell me... He used to make fun of me because I didn't know what words meant. And it wasn't that he was making fun of my illiteracy. It was just the lie that I would tell like I knew what something meant. And he would make fun of that. And he would let me know that it's not a good idea to pretend you know anything. Learning is cool. You know, it's hip to learn stuff. And I didn't know that when I got here. I thought you had to know. Shit. You know, and what I learned from my sponsor is that it's okay to learn some stuff. You know, I learned how to walk through fear. You know, it doesn't mean that I don't have any either. You know? So I guess what I'm trying to share is that when I decided to move and I decided to get involved with this new group, I'm really not even really making these decisions. I'm just trying to live as spiritually as I can. and fourth dimensionally, things just unfold right in front of me, and I don't have to be the captain of my soul and the master of my fate. And I can cooperate. And that's all we're asking you to do, newcomer. Those of you who are coming around here or any other meeting and you don't know really what is going on here, we suggest that you just cooperate and find out. And maybe your life will be saved and changed. You know, and that's what I got taught from the people in AA. And nobody held a gun to my head and said, "You better do this." But damn, when you get in that fear, that's what it sure sounds like. And I did it anyway. Because, real quick, you know, I didn't want to go back. I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back to 5th and St. Julian. The only time I have any business being on 5th and St. Julian is when I do that panel, when I did that panel down there for my friend. I don't want to eat out of those dumpsters anymore. I don't want to smoke cigarettes. I don't want to smoke at all. I haven't been a cigarette in 13 years, but I don't ever want to go back to any of that stuff. And what you people allow me to do is leave here and act like this without the profanity out there. You know, at my job, with my landlord, with the insurance company for the cars, the post guy, the post worker in my neighborhood, his name is Jim. The guy that cleans his suit, his name is Victor. You know, my landlord, her name, you know, I got taught some really tangible depth and weight oriented stuff from this place. You know, and it was because in spite of the personality and in spite of what I think needs to be going on in a meeting, when I was here, there was just a certain amount of respect that we had for the group as a whole. That's all I'm sharing about. You know, and I just hope that that continues one way or another. You know, that we try to have that respect. And that doesn't mean that we all walk around and have these really tight pants on and stuff, you know, and march like the Oompa Loompas. I know goddamn Oompa Loompa. I'm an alcoholic. But I am teachable today. And according to that part in the third step in the book, and I'm not going to quote the whole thing because I can, but I'm not going to. It says we are now on a different basis. What in the hell does that mean in regards to my home group and my relationship with my friends? When they tell me, after, you know, when I'm getting ready to deep, when I'm really getting ready to take in the fruit of the third step, what does that really mean when they're telling me I'm now on a different basis? What does that mean? Does it mean that I stay the same because that's just the way I am? Because the hair in the back of his head used to stand up when he heard people share that in the meeting. That's just the way I am. You know what? I got taught that that's the way you're going to stay and be there. You know, the most constant thing in the universe is change. You know, and I'm just so grateful that on most days, in most moments, especially when I'm disturbed, I try to come from a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. You know, because of myself, I'm nothing. You know, my Father doeth the works. And one of the reasons why Boyce said, you know, come down and open up the Alcatine, come and give a pitch. And he said, you know, because you talk about Dennis like other people don't. You know. And I know that Dennis, you know, people talk about the, you know, the quick money deals and all of that stuff with his pet projects and all that stuff. You know what? Bill Wilson had that same bullshit. He was trying to put this shit on the stock market.
Yeah.
You know, don't judge my ex-sponsor. You want to talk some shit about something, read up on Bill Wilson's crazy ass. You ain't been reading enough. You've just been judging a lot. But what happened was, Bill decided to make some changes by the grace of God, and here we are almost 80 years later trying to do the same thing respectfully. And most of us fail miserably at it, but we keep trying. And that's what the respect is here, you know, here at the Open Door. I remember when Janie came to the Open Door, you know. I remember when Shalady showed up here, you know. I remember Boyce in Warm Springs. I remember Diane, you know. I remember, because I hear people saying, you know what, I have no effective mental defense against that first string. And I'm not going to attack poor readers in AA. But the book clearly points out that there will come a point in time where there will be no effective mental defense against that first string. But on a lot of days, I do have an effective mental defense. And places like this remind me of what that is. Respect for the group reminds me of that defense. But trying to do all things for all people, I lose track of what the defense is. The book says there will come a point in time. Is that all the time for you? Because if it is, you need some step work, Bubba. You got some writing to do. It's not all the time that I'm defenseless against the first thing, especially now that I'm in the solution. So anyway, I started venturing out and going to these other meetings and stuff, and I'm going down here to Redondo Beach, and we formed our little group, and we got our little thing going. And our group is so small that you really see when somebody leaves. It's like, oh my God, somebody left the group. What are we going to do? Quick, close all your books and go find them, you know, or whatever. You know, we don't do that in AA, you know. And every time somebody leaves, a piece of me kind of feels something. But I got taught that we don't chase them, God replaces them. And I'm not here to force Alcoholics Anonymous on anybody. Nobody laid me down on the ground and strapped me to a chair in the Open Door and said, you're never going to drink again. That's not what happened. You know, I kept getting hurt and I kept doing dumb stuff, and my sponsor kept showing me these steps. You know, and here it is 19 years later, and all I can think of is, you know, some of those little talks we would have in that little ugly red Volvo. I couldn't stand that damn car. But every time he came and picked me up, I got my ass in it. And he would drive me around the corner to the meeting. And my mind was telling me, I can walk. Why is he driving me around the corner? And the reason why he was doing that is because he was sharing Alcoholics Anonymous with me. He was trying to make me feel a part of his life. Because he knew I needed him to be a part of mine. You know, he was trying to get me to understand that I didn't understand nothing. That I needed some new information on how to behave and live in life. You know, and I can only see that now. And on certain days, I wish I could have thought a little better, because I'm defiant. And I rebel. And I delay. And I talk shit. And I judge. And I get thirsty. And then I get on my knees and I ask God to help me. And then I stay sober. And then I come and I get to speak. I'm on my way to New York next Friday. I'm going to go speak at the AG group. One of my sponsees lives out there, and she got me a gig out there. We just got back from San Francisco several weeks ago, spoke in Oakland. And I'm not a circuit speaker, I'm a truth seeker. I'll do whatever I have to do to stay connected to the truth of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't care what it is or what my mama and them think about it. I need to do whatever I need to do to stay next to the truth about Alcoholics Anonymous, man. Because of myself alone, you know, I don't have what it takes. Together, connected, you guys have what it makes. You know, you guys make me. I don't get to make me. And what I mean by that is spiritual principles, you know. It's like coming from where I come from to where I am today is nothing short of a miracle. You know, I am a skid row bum and a tramp and a whore. I do not hang out at places like the Open Door. What is that? A head shop? Yeah. I don't hang up. The first time I heard a Lotto Club, I thought it was a Samoan bar or something. You know, I don't know about this environment. I'm here strictly by the grace of God. Quite frankly, on a lot of days, my life is really, really good today. It really is. I'm not just lying about that. I work with these kids. I work with autistic children. I've been doing it for over 13 years before it got popular. And I work for this one company that they're crazy down there, but I don't have to go with them. And I do the stuff that Dennis taught me to do so I can go over there and do what I'm supposed to do. And not be all up in your business because they want to, DeAndre, why don't you want to come play, you know? Come play with us, you know? Come go and be normal. Come go and not remember. Come go and just ignore everything that you live around. And let us be the folk, you know, let social acceptance be the key to recovery. Come on, Bubba! I don't have that kind of life today. Because I got taught that all that glitters is not always gold. And I'll say my boring, long-winded, self-righteous ass here waiting on my higher power to change me than to be out there trying to change myself. That's what I got to do. And that's why I used to come dragging his butt up in here almost every afternoon. Because he would go out there and wrestle with that reality, but he came here for his spiritual finale. He came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're a newcomer and you want to know how to face fear or feel the fear and do it anyway, try Alcoholics Anonymous, the entire package. Not just the part you like, because that's the first thing I recognize about AA, man, is you can walk in with your hand up and say everything. And I'm here to share that there's more going on here than that. Being able to stroll into a meeting and being able to say and do everything, you can do that at a bar. Being able to come here and be a part of the greater good, help put up this stuff. I know somebody did this. I know somebody came in here and arranged these chairs and made that coffee. It doesn't just happen, newcomer. People are doing it. You know, somebody gave me my first big book because I heard them sharing a few months ago the statistics about the amount of money that it takes to really keep the books going. And I'm so ignorant and bad with money. All I know is I better be focusing on spiritual principles because some of these people don't seem to read certain parts of the literature. But AA works best broke, taking care of their minimum expenses. Because when we get a lot of money, we get a lot of property, and then we become prestigious, and the next thing you know, a newcomer, what's that? I'm an old-timerville now. The gated community of old-timers. Where newcomers are not allowed. Because they show want sex. And they are now sacred. And you need money. And today what I need is God. What I need is self-honesty. What I need is respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. Furthermore, I need respect for the Open Door. And if I don't have those things, I might as well start tattooing page 52 on my back. Because the bedevilment's come. And I don't want to be a bedeviled fool wandering around in AA not living the right way. So if you know anything about me, it's probably true. But I'm here to share that you're underestimating the power of recovery because I've changed. And I'm not going to take any man's woman bullshit in regards to what AA can do. Nobody in this society can stop God from helping me. And I don't think anybody can stop God from helping the Open Door either. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're new to this group, I'll wrap it up by saying, give us a chance. You know, let us help you. Because I bet you, if that takes place, you're going to want to help us. Because if we've been helping you, and you're not really helping us, then you've been getting the wrong stuff from us. You haven't been getting it right. You've been talking to these spots. If you have one. There's some beautiful things going on here. I'll share this one story. We came here to the noon meeting one day. It was me and a couple of my friends years and years ago. I was so happy to get on down here. We had a dance. I think I had sex with somebody the night before. And we came down here, man, and we opened up this door and we smelled this foul odor. And I don't know if anybody remembers who Bruce is. But Bruce had come, and we're not on TV, we're not on the radio, and we're not concerned. What about his anonymity? What about your reading skills? Anyway, let's work on those. Then we'll talk to you about what anonymity really is and what level we're on. But at any rate, we come through the door, Jay, and it smelled so bad in here. I was like, what is that odor? And apparently the secretary from the night, you know, this is the open door. Some secretary got the Holy Ghost and left and left the damn door open. And Bruce had gotten in and taken his feces and smeared it all over the bathroom wall. And I came in. We didn't have cell phones then. Yeah. You have to pay your sponsor when you want to kill somebody. They got to wait. Because the beeper goes off. And so he said, clean it up. And I'd love to stand here and talk about how I argued with him. Or how we broke down the molecules. What makes feces really happen. Or what insurance ID number we could get from Bruce in order to get a cleaning crew down. We cleaned it up. We cleaned it up. And the reason why we cleaned it up is because we wanted to have a meeting. And it would have just been hard to have a meeting with all that shit everywhere. Take the metaphor in that, will you? If you really care about yourself. We clean up the shit because it's really hard to have a meeting. I'm okay with cleaning up the shit in order to do the meeting, in order to be a part of the group, in order to be a part of what AA does to people like me and Charlotte. The crossing guard gone into the classroom. AA. And I remember her coming and telling me, and she tells it, so I'll share it and shut up. But she used to tell me, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then her next sentence would be, okay, where are we going again? Where are we going? Sometimes what are we going to do is connected to where we're going. Where are we going with this? Are we going down the shitter? I think that's a useless journey since most of us come from there. Respect takes me to a different place. And that's where I need to be, man. Anyway, I'm grateful to be sober. I hope I gave you something to think about. Thanks for having me.